So, as usual, I need a Sanskrit reader. I'm not such a great Sanskrit reader. Jai Shila, you can do? What we're going to do is, because 18 is there, this morning, actually, I wanted to speak on text 20, which has a significantly, let's say, powerful purport, although all the purports are nice, but... So what we want to do is we want to read the Sanskrit and translation for, maybe Ram Roy, maybe you can come do it, please. You're my man. You can come over here. Is there another mic? There's no other mic? This other mic is working? Here's another book here. Okay. And then we'll chant responsibly text 19, and then we'll read text 20 also, along with the purport. While we're waiting, I just thought that maybe it would be nice to reflect on a previous chapter, just a little bit, because today marks the end of the Katyayani Vrat. And on this day commemorates the day when Krishna stole the garments of the gopis. I hope it wasn't as cold then as it is today. But it was pretty cold, I'm sure. You can imagine how we're here bundled up and chudders and this and that, but Krishna took everything away, and they were not only standing in the cold, but, you know, they were coming out of the cold Yamuna River, which is also really cold. I don't know if you've bathed in the Yamuna lately, but it's pretty cold, especially this time in the morning. So we should hope and pray that if we're so fortunate, we may also get our clothes stolen by Krishna one day.
My dear splendid wasted gopis, some people are generally versatile, or like parents, naturally affectionate. Such persons who devotedly serve even those who fail to reciprocate to them are following the true, faultless path of religion, and they are true well-wishers. Text 19.
Vajato api na
vai
kechit
bhajanti
abjata
buddha
apta kama akrita gya guru druha Bhajanti abhajata Atmarama hi apta kama
Akritagna
guru druha Bhajatopi na vai keche Bhajanti abhajata kuta Akritagya Guru Druha
Vajata
With those who are acting favorably
Api
Even
Not
Vai
Certainly
Kechit
Some
Vajanti
Reciprocate
Abhajata
With those who are not acting favorably.
Kuta.
What to speak of.
Atmarama.
Self-satisfied.
He.
Indeed.
Akshama.
Akshama.
Those who have already attained their material desires.
desire.
Those who have already attained material desires.
Akritagya. Those who are ungrateful.
Those who are ungrateful.
Guru
Druha.
Those who are inimical to superiors.
Those who are inimical to superiors.
Translation. Then there are those individuals who are spiritually self-satisfied, materially fulfilled, or by nature ungrateful, or simply envious of superiors. Such persons do not love even those who love them, but to speak of those who are inimical. Purport. Some people, being spiritually self-satisfied, do not reciprocate others' affection, because they want to avoid entanglement in mundane things. Other persons do not reciprocate simply out of envy or ignorance, and still others fail to reciprocate because they are materially satisfied and thus uninterested in new material opportunities. Lord Krishna patiently explains all these things to the gopis.
Now this is a nice purport, and a lot could be said about it, but I think we'll move on and we'll combine principles. Text number 20.
Naham tu sakyo vajito vijanti vajami amisam vritti vrittaye yathadam labda vajiti naste akchintayan yan vritto nabeda. But the reason I do not immediately reciprocate the affection of living beings, even when they worship me, O gopis, is that I want to intensify their loving devotion. They then become like a poor man who has gained some wealth and then lost it. He does become so anxious about it that he can think of nothing else. Report. Lord Krishna states in Bhagavad Gita, Yetam Mam Pajyante Hamstataya Vijamiyamam. As people approach me, I reciprocate with them accordingly. Yet, even if the Lord is approached by someone with devotion, to intensify the devotee's love, the Lord may not immediately reciprocate fully. In fact, the Lord is truly reciprocating. After all, the sincere devotee always prays to the Lord, please help me to love you purely. Therefore, the Lord's so-called neglect is actually the fulfillment of the devotee's prayer. Lord Krishna intensifies our love for him by apparently separating himself from us, and the result is that we achieve what we really wanted and prayed for, intense love for the absolute truth, Krishna. Thus, Lord Krishna's apparent negligence is actually his thoughtful reciprocation and the fulfillment of our deepest and purest desire. According to the Acharyas, as Lord Krishna began to speak this verse, the gopis looked at one another with squinting eyes, trying to hide the smiles breaking out on their faces. Even as Lord Krishna was speaking, the gopis had begun to realize that he was bringing them to the highest perfection of loving service.
Om Agyanata Mirundasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshu Amlitam Jena Tasmai Shri Gurve Namaha. Shri Chaitanya Marobishtam Stapitam Jena Bhutale Swayam Rupakadamayam Tarati Swapitam Dikam. He Krishna Kuruna Sindhu Dinabandho Jigapati Gopeshi Govika Kantaradha Kantanamotstate Tapta Kanchana Gorangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sutirevi Pranamami Hari Paye Sri Radhika Prana Samam Kanyasin Vishakikshi Sikshita Shoka Sostavam Lilamritanut Staritanga Madhurim Anangapovam Panamami Manjarim Mancha Kalpatrubhyascha Kripa Sinduvyevicha Patitanam Pavaneva Vaisnaveva Momaha Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nitananda Sri Advaita Garadha Sri Vasari Gopakavinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. One time, Srila Prabhupada was asked by a devotee in a room conversation, if I'm not mistaken, if my memory serves me. The devotee asked Srila Prabhupada that Srila Prabhupada, in the spiritual world, everything is a person, right? And Srila Prabhupada said, yes. Then the devotee said, but Srila Prabhupada, what does the sweet ball experience when he's being, if everything's a person, so the sweet ball is also a person. So what does a sweet ball experience when he's being eaten by a cowherd boy? So Prabhupada's answer was, does anyone know the answer? Why don't you go there and find out? That was Prabhupada's answer. So I always appreciated that statement, because actually that's the whole purpose of the whole affair, you know, from the let's say grossest material ignorance to the highest enlightenment. The whole purpose of the thing is to somehow or other come to the position of actually going there and finding out, you know, what is the beauty of Krishna and Krishna's transcendental reciprocation with his devotees. However, easier said than done. In Jiva Goswami's commentary to Bhaktivedanta Sindhu, one shloka is there, wherein Rupa Goswami has mentioned, you may recall, if you remember reading it in Nectar of Devotion also, it's mentioned, that only after a million births of worshipping the Archa Vigraha in the temple. Listen to this carefully. This is very significant. Only after a million births of worshipping the Archa Vigraha in the temple can it be seen that the holy name of Krishna is constantly dancing on the tongue of a devotee. So this constantly chanting of the holy name, it is the only way to become freed from the nam aparadam. So here we see that Rupa Goswami is saying that facility of becoming freed from all namaparadam by coming to the position of constantly chanting the holy name, that this is only achievable after a million births of worshipping the deity in the temple. But then Jiva Goswami says, what are you saying, Rupa? What is this? Because in a previous verse, you told that just by worshipping the deity in the temple for one lifetime, one gets a spiritual body befitting the association of the Lord and enters into the Vaikuntha realm in that spiritual body. So how is it that he poses the question, Jiva Goswami poses the question to Rupa Goswami, that how is it that now, how is it that if in one lifetime of worshipping the deity, one merits having the spiritual body with which to associate with the Lord? How is it that now you're talking about a million births, a million lifetimes of worshipping the deity in the temple before you come to the position of constantly chanting the holy name? So then Jiva Goswami answers the question very wonderfully. He says that the only answer to this question is that it is the prerogative of Krishna alone, his own sweet will, which causes him to make the devotee, by his kripa, as a manifestation of Lord Krishna's kripa shakti, he causes the devotee to take a million births, even though the devotee is fit to go back home, back to Godhead. Krishna causes the devotee to take a million births. Why? Simply to intensify his anxiety for attaining Krishna. Simply for intensifying the anxiety. That anxiety for attainment of Krishna is the natural expression of the development of love of Godhead. So to intensify the love that the devotee has for Krishna, he causes a devotee to take a million births. We see in the example of Mukunda Dutt in Gaur Lila, we see the example of how Mahaprabhu refused to see him on account of what Mahaprabhu was deeming as inappropriate activity, sometimes siding with the devotees and sometimes siding with the Mayavadis. So he banished Mukunda Dutt, and Mukunda Dutt was disallowed to come to Srivas Angam for the kirtans. And at the time of Mahaprakash, Mukunda Dutt was sitting at the gate, crying and crying and crying. So the devotees saw his pitiable condition and again asked to Mahaprabhu, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, why don't you allow Mukunda Dutt to come? And Mukunda Dutt asked the devotees to request him that when will he be allowed to come to see him, to get his darshan again. And Mahaprabhu, he answered that you tell to Mukunda Dutt that he will only be able to see me after 1 million lifetimes. So then, as soon as the devotees told to Mukunda Dutt these words, Mukunda Dutt immediately began to dance in ecstasy. And he was saying, only a million lifetimes, only a million lifetimes. Haribo, Haribo, only a million lifetimes. So, I will see him. I will get his darshan. He was only thinking of the happiness of being able to serve the lotus feet of his Lord. He was not even thinking in the slightest. He was not in the least, I mean to say. He was not thinking about the troubles and the difficulties of Janma, Mrityu, Jara, and Vyadi. But rather, he was only absorbed in the thought of the ananda of having the darshan of Lord Chaitanya. So Mahaprabhu, he immediately called for Mukunda Dutt and embraced him. We can see what is Mukunda Dutt's condition. On one hand, Krishna will make the devotee remain a million lifetimes worshipping the deity in the temple to intensify his loving service attitude. But on the other hand, we see that Mukunda Dutt, it must be that his service attitude was already sufficiently intensified. So if the service attitude is sufficiently intensified in this lifetime, let's say that it may expedite our progress to the Nityalilas of Mahaprabhu and the Nityalilas of Radha and Krishna. We should not make Krishna wait a million lifetimes before we get around to intensifying our devotional service. Anyhow, I feel that it is my observation, at least, that this sloka number 20 of the 32nd chapter of the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam is perhaps one of the most profound statements in the whole Bhagavatam. I would like to, bring into the purview of our intelligence the statements of Srila Prabhupada in Krishna book, which is very penetrating, which are very penetrating and insightful. And it brings out some very interesting understanding, which I think is, significant. Krishna indirectly answered the questions of the gopis, even those questions which implied that Krishna did not properly reciprocate their dealings. In answer, Krishna said that he, as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is self-satisfied. He does not require anyone's love. But at the same time, he said, now this isn't in the Bhagavatam, but this is Prabhupada's, contribution. But at the same time, he said that he is not ungrateful. He is always grateful. Of course, I think, Acharya Prabhu, you're going to give class tomorrow, right? So, you will be giving class on text 21 and 22. There's a couple of small purports. But just, I don't want to take away your class. But just I wanted to make this this point, as it is mentioned in the next verse, that Krishna says that even when I removed myself from your sight by suddenly disappearing, I never stopped loving you. This is a very, very profound statement also by Krishna. But that is a necessary point in order to bring out the conclusion that I'm driving at. My dear friends, Krishna continued, you might be aggrieved by my words and acts, but you must know that sometimes I do not reciprocate my devotees' dealings with me. My devotees are very much attached to me, but sometimes I do not reciprocate their feelings properly in order to increase their love for me more and more. Now this is another Prabhupada contribution. If I can very easily be approached by them, they, the devotees, might think, Krishna is so easily available. So sometimes I do not respond. If a person has no money, but after some time accumulates some wealth, and then loses it, he will think of the lost property 24 hours a day. Similarly, in order to increase the love of my devotees, sometimes I appear to be lost to them. And instead of forgetting me, they feel their loving sentiments for me increase. My dear friends, do not think for a moment that I have been dealing with you as I do with ordinary devotees. I know what you are. You have forsaken all kinds of social and religious obligations. You have given up all connections with your parents without caring for social convention and religious obligations. You have come to me and love me, etc. So, what is significant about this, first of all, is that Krishna's never ungrateful, even for a little minutest surrender in the direction of the eternal constitutional relationship between the jiva and Krishna. And furthermore, even more importantly in certain respects, is that Krishna here, as Prabhupada is saying, he's telling that the devotee might think that, oh, Krishna is so easily available. This statement indicates that Krishna really doesn't want to be taken cheaply. He wants to be, let's say, appreciated to the nth degree, so to speak. So, we should try to appreciate that when Krishna deals with us in various ways, because after all, there's a nice shloka in Bhaktivinoda Thakur's Bal Sangeet, which is very, very good. Actually, this whole song is the last song of Bal Sangeet. The sloka reads that, I'm not so good at Bengali, so I'm going to struggle along. Bear with me, please. Hoye Vishaye avesh pele man jatana ashesha chadi radha shame braja dame bhujjo heta nana klesha. This verse is a very, very significant verse, and it helps to establish the bhav of the devotee in the matter of returning back home, back to Godhead. So many times Srila Prabhupada has used this terminology, back home, back to Godhead. So, as far as the the, let's say, original fall down of the jiva and all these things are concerned, people can go on arguing about this ad infinitum. And actually, it may not be possible for them to reach a proper conclusion. As a matter of fact, Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, it is useless to entertain such questions because the conditioned soul is incapable of actually ascertaining the transcendental position of Godhead. And he's also incapable, on account of that, to really know in truth what is the workings of the energies of Godhead, being subject to Krishna's Mahamaya. So, in this sloka, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he wants to establish the mood. Actually, whether the truth be that we came from some impersonal condition, being glanced out of Mahavishnu forcibly against Pradhan, as it is mentioned by Bhaktivinoda Thakur in Jiva Dharma. He describes the that there are various living entities, some created or manifest from Krishna, some manifest from Baladev, some manifest from Radha, some manifest from Shankarshan. And those who are meant to be, let's say, impregnated into the material energy are manifested from Mahavishnu. However, it may not be, let's say, proper for us to immediately jump to conclusions based on that information. Because the same Bhaktivinoda Thakur is here making another statement. This statement reveals whether or not one way or the other way is true as far as tattva is concerned. The more important principle is the establishment of the mood, the bhav. The establishment of the bhav is actually in accordance with the siddhanta. There's a difference between tattva and siddhanta in certain respects. So, bhakti, or the establishment of the aspiration, the purvarag of the devotee, is more important than the consideration of tattva vichar. So, Bhaktivinoda Thakur here says, my dear mind, you have brought unending trouble upon yourself under the sway of material sense gratification. Leaving the company of Radha Shyam in Brajadam, you have come to this material world and suffered a host of painful miseries. This is a very interesting statement. He's telling that he's telling to his mind that leaving the company of Radha Shyam in Brajadam, you have come to this material world and suffered a host of painful miseries. Trapped within the prison house of Maya Devi and tossed helplessly according to the urges of your past karma, your life has come to an end after slaving and slaving away at very difficult and mundane labor. Absorbed in the bodily concept, thinking in terms of I and mine, you experience only attraction and repulsion for dull material things. You are actually composed of spiritually conscious bliss, whose only happiness is found in Krishna Seva. Alas, you have fallen into the hands of the five material elements, earth, water, fire, air, and ether, and have thus become just like an ignorant sheep who is helpless within their firm grip. But now your ultimate means of deliverance is to be found in the company of sadhus discussing topics of the eternally conscious nature. The association of materialistic woman and as well as the endeavors for accumulating wealth for the purpose of sense gratification, oh my dear brother, give up such insignificant play. Please accept the pure advice of Chan Bol, rejecting all deceptive tendencies that are associated with the sex of impure bowels. Just enter the flow of pure spiritual mellows of devotion. And I'm going to add, by chanting the holy name, because he's mentioned this point again and again. So, anyhow, Krishna has a right to any variety of sportive leela. If Krishna likes, he can make the impossible possible. And it may become possible for a living entity to be thrown by Krishna into a situation wherein he has to, let's say, deliver that soul from the clutches of the most abominable condition of life, of abject forgetfulness. Darkness serves a very, very useful and vital purpose in enhancing the beauty of light. Krishna never stops loving us, even if he, by his own will and by his own arrangements, makes for a situation wherein it appears that he is distant from us. It appears that he is non-existent to us. Everyone is looking for Krishna because everyone is ananda maya vyasat. But Krishna's sportive leelas are such that he always thinks of the welfare of every living entity. Therefore, it is improper to conclude that Krishna ever has anything but our well-being in mind. In Jiva Dharma, it is mentioned that one disciple of a certain Babaji, who was acting as the guru of the disciple, he asked to Babaji Maharaj that if such sportive play of Krishna comes to be known to the conditioned souls, that he has put the conditioned soul, he has put the soul, the jiva, into terrible suffering conditions of life, just so that he can derive the pleasure of seeing the exhibition of his golden compassionate nature upon the black background of material suffering, conditional life of the jiva, then will not that jiva, that conditioned soul, become resentful and retaliate against the Lord? So Babaji Maharaj, he answers the question wonderfully. He says, yes, the conditioned soul, if he chances to hear how it is that Krishna has purposefully made the arrangement for the souls to come to suffer in abject ignorance of his transcendental existence, suffering unlimitedly. You can't even imagine how much suffering is going on in the material world. And we can't even imagine how much suffering, so-called suffering, it is actually misery, just like a dream condition, when there's a nightmare, it is miserable. But when one wakes up from the dream, then the state of well-being becomes all the more appreciated. So similarly, Babaji Maharaj tells that the conditioned soul certainly will retaliate, because the conditioned soul is not possessed of pure unalloyed devotional consciousness. But the unalloyed devotee, he will never retaliate against the Lord. The conditioned soul will retaliate, and on account of his retaliation, Krishna will cast that soul again into demoniac species of life to suffer repeated birth and death for another time immemorial, until the conditioned soul comes finally to the perfected condition of life, wherein he doesn't begrudge any amount of suffering that he has to undergo in order to ultimately bring about Krishna's pleasure. That is the pure devotional consciousness. Srimati Radharani experiences more suffering and more happiness in her dealings with Krishna than all the suffering and all the happiness that can be possibly conceived of in both the material and spiritual worlds put together. How much suffering she must experience in her relationship with Krishna. But what is her mentality? Her mentality is given to us by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, by the grace of Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami in Chaitanya Charitamrita, that suffering which brings about Krishna's happiness becomes the cause of my greatest happiness. So a pure devotee will never begrudge Krishna. Rather, he will understand that if Krishna, because Krishna's the most intelligent, it is not that we have no part to play in the matter of the misuse of our minute independence or our free will. Yet Krishna's so kind that he takes advantage. He knows how to make the best use of the bad bargain. Not only for himself, in the matter of his relishing the exhibition of his compassionate nature upon the black background of material existence, but also his main purpose in the whole affair of manifesting and dissolving eternally cosmic manifestations after cosmic manifestation. His whole purpose is simply for the enlightenment of the jiva, to give the emancipated jiva an experience of ananda which cannot even be experienced by the nityasiddha, eternally free jivas. Because the nityasiddhas, they never come under the sway of mahamaya. They never lose the transcendental position. Even devotees like Jai and Vijay, who fell down, or not fell down, but were cursed to come again to this material world after their emancipation, they never even came under the influence of the three modes of material nature as Hiranyakashipu, Hiranyaksha, and other incarnations of themselves. So, what to speak of the Nityasiddhas? What to speak of Radharani? What to speak of Krishna? they may know something of the, of the material condition. They can see that someone is suffering. So in certain respects, they may be able to empathize and manifest compassion on one level. Even because Krishna never stops loving us, he continues to reside within the heart of every living entity, in the body of a pig, in the body of a worm and stool, in the body of a demigod, or in the body of human beings, etc. So he's continuously remaining with us, inspiring us in various ways, so as to bring us ultimately to the supreme conclusion of transcendental enlightenment, which by contrast to the darkness is experienced wonderfully in a way which can never be experienced even by the eternal associates of Krishna. Therefore, Sanatana Goswami in Brihad Bhagavatamrita, he proclaims that the emancipated jivas who are coming from this material world to the, eternal association of Krishna in the spiritual world are Krishna's dearmost devotees. And being Krishna's dearmost devotees, Krishna very often asked the emancipated jiva when he gets back home to Godhead. Krishna asked them, "My dear Swarup, you say that you are my unalloyed pure devotee and you have unconditional love for me." "Yes, anything you say, Krishna." "Then could you please do me one favor? Because after all, there's no one more qualified than you. No one who can empathize with the plight of the fallen conditioned souls more than you. My dear Swarup, could you please go back to the material world to deliver the fallen conditioned souls?" Sanatana Goswami says that very often Krishna asked this of the emancipated jiva, because no one can understand what is in store for the jiva. No one can understand the nature of the darkness of material existence like the emancipated jiva. And no one can understand what is in store for the jiva in the matter of the wonderfully enhanced transcendental bliss that is experienced by the emancipated jiva against the black background of his previous condition of material suffering. No one can understand that except the emancipated jiva. Therefore, he becomes the greatest emissary of Krishna in the matter of manifesting Krishna's Karuna Shakti or Kripa Shakti on account of that, experience that he himself has had in the matter of understanding the sweetness and beauty of Krishna's wonderful sportive leelas. So anyhow, we should not be attached to moksha. We should not be attached to mukti. We should not be attached to any of the four kinds of Vaishnava mukti either, including salokya. We will accept any of the four types of Vaishnava mukti, leaving aside suyuja mukti, which is for the, impersonalist. They are considered to be no better than demons in certain respects, because the demons also get emancipation, into Krishna's Brahman effulgence, or merged into his body, etc. So, we're not interested in the Sayuja Mukti. But we will accept the other four types of mukti, only when it is in consideration of the pleasure of Krishna for the fulfillment of Krishna's desires. Otherwise, if Krishna expresses another desire, that we come back to this material world, we say that we want to assist the acharyas in their preaching mission. It would do us well to, why don't you go there and find out, so that we will have the experience, so that we can have the, let's say, the magnified ananda, anandamoy experience of seeing the contrast between light and dark, to share with the fallen conditioned souls. Then we can actually become most qualified representatives of our acharyas. Until that time, we can do our level best. But we should not be so proud that we are preachers. Our preaching is basically, you can say, so much mouthing off. First, do the real work. Make yourself fit. Higher than saving others is to save yourself. Make yourself fit to enter into the eternal leelas of Krishna, even if it takes millions of lifetimes to do so. That determination should be there. Our anxiety for going back home, back to Godhead, for gaining the transcendental experience of Krishna's compassionate nature, which is golden in complexion, the beauty of Srimati Radharani, is on account of the Karunamai aspect of her personality. That golden compassionate nature. What makes Krishna more beautiful as Gauranga Mahaprabhu is that Karunamai manifestation of his golden compassionate nature. Krishna wants to see the exhibition of his golden compassionate nature on the black background of material existence, but moreover, he manifests as Mahaprabhu to go into the depths of the darkest regions of Kali Yuga in order to even magnify to a greater magnitude the experience of himself, his own compassionate nature upon this material existence. And furthermore, just as Shankaracharya paved the way by creating Varnasankara to facilitate fallen jivas in the nether regions of the universe coming up to this earth planet to have the opportunity to be delivered by Lord Chaitanya's special mercy, by his Sankirtan movement. What is the Sankirtan movement? It is the movement which is propagating the chanting of Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Krishna's compassionate nature is manifested in many varieties of ways, just like Om Bhur Bhuvah Svah Tat Savitur Varenyam. This Savitur, Bhargo Devasya, etc. This Savitur is described by Srila Prabhupada as being Lord Chaitanya. And one of Prabhupada's godbrothers, he explained that Bhargo, the effulgence, is none other than the effulgence of Srimati Radharani, who is compassion personified. So, Radha and Radha Nam, Hare Krishna, Krishna, Radharani and Krishna, and Radha and Krishna's names, Radharani's name is more compassionate. Gaura's name is more compassionate than even Gaura himself. Radha and Krishna's names are more compassionate than Radha and Krishna's, than Radha and Krishna themselves. So,
the actual exhibition of the compassionate nature of Radha and Krishna is seen directly in the performance of Samkirtan Jagya. So if we want to avail ourselves to the compassionate nature of Krishna so that we can begin to understand something about Krishna's dealings in the matter of his enhancing the love of his devotees by separating himself from the devotees under various circumstances, if we want to understand that and gain a direct perception of that, then we have to advance ourselves in Krishna consciousness by taking shelter of Samkirtan Ras, by taking shelter of the holy names of Krishna. Then we will avail ourselves to the highest manifestation of Krishna's compassion. There's no higher manifestation of Krishna's compassion than the propagation of the holy names of Krishna. So anyway, there's one more thing that I would like to read, if you don't mind. Actually, there's a number of things that I would like to read. But I don't want to go too long today because today is the end of my Katyayani Vrat. And I have a few things to do before noontime. Otherwise, we would keep you here until at least 11 o'clock. Don't mind. It is not my intention to drag on and on. But I want to read something very interesting, which is corresponding to this subject matter, although it is hailing from Krishna's Dwarka Leela. This is in the story called Talks Between Krishna and Rukmini in Srila Prabhupada's Krishna book. Krishna is answering Rukmini. He says, this is in Krishna's answer. I'm only going to read a portion of it. My dear chaste and pious wife, I have tested on the basis of strict chastity your love for your husband, and you have passed the examination most successfully. I have purposely agitated you by speaking many words not applicable to your character, but I am surprised to see that not a pinch of your devotion to me has been deviated from its fixed position. My dear wife, I am the bestower of all benedictions, even up to the standard of liberation from this material world, and it is I only who can stop the continuation of material existence and call one back home, back to Godhead. One whose devotion for me is adulterated worships me for some material benefit. One whose devotion for me is adulterated worships me for some material benefit, just to keep himself in the world of material happiness, culminating in the pleasure of sex life. One who engages himself in severe penances and austerities just to attain this material happiness is certainly under the illusion of my external energy. Persons who are engaged in my devotional service simply for the purpose of material gain and sense gratification are certainly very foolish. For material happiness based on sex life is available in the most abominable species of life, such as the hogs and dogs. No one should try to approach me for such happiness, which is available even if one is put into a hellish condition of life. It is better, therefore, for persons who are simply after material happiness and not after me, to remain in that hellish condition. Just see. Better not to approach Krishna. Although it is mentioned, sarva, what is it? Akama, sarva kama va moksha kama darati, etc. But you'll find that in the purport of that very sloka of Bhagavatam, Prabhupada makes it very clear that whether you have no desires, akama, all desires, sarvakama, or whether you're mokshakami, it doesn't matter what you are. Just give up your attachment to all those desires and worship me. That's what Krishna's telling. Just give up all the attachments and worship me, not for the fulfillment of those desires, but for my pleasure. Then Krishna's so kind that he will take away, Krishna's known as Hari, he will take away all the sources of miserable conditions of life and reinstate one in an eternal constitutional relationship with Krishna. Of course, even if it takes in millions of lifetimes to do that. But nevertheless, the point being that it is not our business to approach Krishna with an adulterated or conditional service attitude. If we want to go back home, back to Godhead, we have to become unconditional and we have to become unalloyed in our devotional mentality. Material contamination is so strong that everyone is working very hard day and night for material happiness. The show of religion, austerity, penance, humanitarianism, philanthropy, politics, science, everything is aimed at realizing some material benefit. For the immediate success of material benefit, materialistic persons generally worship different demigods, and under the spell of material propensities, they sometimes take to devotional service of the Lord. But sometimes it so happens that if a person sincerely serves the Lord and at the same time maintains material ambitions, the Lord very kindly removes the sources of material happiness. Of course, we understand there's no difference between happiness and distress on the material platform, although there appears to be some difference. So Hari, as we explained, means taking away the cause of the distress, which is repeated birth and death, etc. Or, moreover, forgetfulness of Krishna, which is the greatest cause of distress. Not finding any recourse in material happiness, the devotee then engages himself absolutely in pure devotional service. Lord Krishna continued, "My dear best of queens, I clearly understand that you have no material ambition. Your only purpose is to serve me, and you have long been engaged in unalloyed service. Exemplary, unalloyed devotional service not only can bestow upon the devotee liberation from this material world, but it also promotes him to the spiritual world, to be eternally engaged in my service. Persons too much addicted to material happiness cannot render such service. Women whose hearts are polluted and full of material desires devise various means of sense gratification while outwardly showing themselves to be great devotees." This is Krishna speaking, please. Shall we go on? Anyway, I wanted to, one last thing, if you don't mind, because it's not 9:30 yet, so we should be at least allowed to go to 9:30. I have here before us Madhurya Kadambini, which is a very important book for anyone who wants to get a glimpse at the progress of devotional service from Shraddha to Prema and beyond. It's very important. I want to, at this point, just for our edification, because hardly we can expect that the most of us are, let's say, relishing the nuances of prema bhakti ras. But still, it's important that we at least have a look at what is in store for us in the matter of, let's see, achieving that prayojan siddhi, so that we can at least be tempted to try for it. So I'm going to read some a considerable section, if you don't mind. Please listen carefully, because it's very beautiful. I won't be able to read all of it, but I would like to read a few paragraphs. Do you mind listening to my attempt to read these things? I hope that sometimes people say that it's better to just shoot from the hip, you know, and speak than trying to read, because people get bored of reading. But this is very, very nice subject matter, and I hope that the atmospheric conditions allows for the assimilation of this subject matter, at least to some extent. When prema blossoms, the Lord reveals first His form of matchless beauty to the enraptured devotee. This is very much in line with the discussion in text number 20. So that's why I'm bringing it out a little. The devotee's senses and mind become one, and he beholds with all his senses the Lord's exquisite beauty. At the sight of the Lord's unparalleled beauty, the devotee feels ecstatic symptoms, astasattvic vikara, like being paralyzed, quivering, weeping, and so on. These ecstatic symptoms begin to hinder his vision of the Lord. See, just see. His own ecstatic symptoms is causing separation, you know, which does nothing more than enhance his love for Krishna, intensifies his anxiety for attaining Krishna. All of this that I'm going to read now, all of this will be experienced by a devotee who achieves prema in the present lifetime while he's still, you can say, externally confined to his sadhak deha. These ecstatic symptoms begin to hinder his vision of the Lord. Not only that, but the exhilaration renders him unconscious. What a calamity. He's just seen Krishna, and suddenly the tears, etc., cloud his vision, and he can't see anymore. And then the exhilaration of the ecstasy on account of his feelings of separation by not being able to see the Lord renders him unconscious. Seeing the devotee's condition, the Lord consolingly manifest his second ambrosial attribute, his physical fragrance, which immediately arrest the devotee's sense of smell. Now all the devotee's senses withdraw from the sense of sight and rush to center on the sense of smell. This overpowers him, and once again, intense joy causes him to lose consciousness. So again and again, Krishna once again rescues the devotee, and this time the Lord revives him with his melodious voice. The Lord speaks to him, saying, "My dear devotee, I am now your captive, fully under your control. Do not be overwhelmed. Just perceive me and fulfill the desire of your heart." The devotee's senses become surcharged, and they seek to hear and absorb the sweet melody of his beloved Lord's voice. Again, he is unable to contain his ecstasy, and he becomes bereft of consciousness. Then the Lord, full of compassion, embraces the devotee with his body, displaying his fourth nectarian opulence of tender youthfulness. To the dasya devotee, in the mellow of servitorship, he places his lotus feet on the devotee's head. To the sakya devotee, in friendship, he entwines his lotus fingers with the devotee's fingers. To the vatsalya devotee, in parental love, the Lord wipes away his tears with his lotus hands. And to the madhurya devotee, in conjugal love, he draws him. It's interesting, he draws him, because remember, he's still in his sadhak deha. He, she is still in his, her sadhak deha. Anyhow, he draws him to his chest and wraps his arms around him in a tender embrace. From this we can understand that the Lord reciprocates appropriately with the different mellows of each devotee's love. Just as before, when the devotee swoons in indescribable joy, the Lord shows his fifth opulence, that of versatile loving exchanges. Krishna offers the devotee sublime ambrosia in the form of chewed remnants from his mouth and lips. As the bhakta fully relishes it, his sense of taste becomes satiated. At this stage, the Lord appears to his devotee, who is now absorbed in the conjugal mellow, and initiates him into a transcendental emotional exchange of intense loving intimacy, long coveted by him. Of course, the Lord never divulges such a confidential mood to any other devotee except one in the madhurya rus, the conjugal mellow. The scriptures have identified 18 human shortcomings that go against its tenets. They are as follows: illusion, sleepiness, uncivility, lust, greed, madness, envy, cruelty, lamentations, over-endeavor, deceit, anger, desire, fear, mistakes, intolerance, and dependence. The scriptures proclaim that the Lord's qualities are absolutely free from all these discrepancies. Occasionally, Kripa Shakti arranges the display of some of these discrepancies in the dealings of Krishna, Rama, and so on, and the devotees then perceive them. By the ingenuity of Kripa Shakti, however, these same faults are transformed from banality to divine magnificence. They become converted to transcendental excellences, embellishing the Lord's personality. In order to delight in the Lord's divine qualities, which the Lord himself so explicitly exhibits, the enlightened and powerful devotees in the later stage of prema has to constantly and repeatedly relish them. Simultaneously, as these qualities blossom to their fullest possible expression, the devotee's heart floods with wonder, sweeping him to perfection. he relishes that the Lord's bhakta vatsalya quality, his protective love of his devotees, is beyond compare. And again, he remembers the Lord's magnanimity, melting his heart with sublime emotions. The Supreme Lord acknowledges his devotee's feelings and says to him, "My dear devotee, you have sacrificed wife, children, wealth, and home countless times and many, many births. You have tolerated such sufferings as the ravages of scorching summers, freezing winters, hunger, thirst, pain, and disease, only so you could serve me. And I have asked you to, as I have asked you to. You have disregarded a million humiliations from others and maintained your life by begging. Yet so far, I have been able to reciprocate with you. Yet so far, I have been unable to reciprocate with you and offer you anything. This makes me indebted to you. Now tell me, please remember, just like the gopis, Krishna's telling in the next verse, which Acharya will speak on, Acharya Prabhu will speak on, how it is that Krishna says that I cannot repay my debt. So here, that was for the gopis who had attained Vastu Siddhi. Krishna does this again and again and again. You know, all along the way, as we pointed out in the beginning, he's not ungrateful even for the slightest service. Oh, Hare Krishna. So, this makes me indebted to you. Now tell me, what can I offer you? Lordship of the entire universe? The position of Lord Brahma? All the mystic opulences and so on are not befitting. Hence, how can I offer them to you? It is becoming of a gentleman to offer, is it becoming of a gentleman to offer grass, straw, and other animal fodder to a human being? Considering all this, I offer myself to you. There's a nice statement in Tulsi Mahatmya in this regard. Krishna says that I cannot find any amount of valuable jewels, gold, even if I were to offer all the gold and valuable jewels of both the material and spiritual worlds, I cannot find any amount which would compensate for a devotee's offering of a single tulsi leaf to my lotus feet. He says, therefore, the only thing that I find which will, let's say, even begin to compensate for that offering of a single tulsi leaf is myself. I have to offer myself to my devotee. Just on account of offering a single tulsi leaf. We may not have love of Godhead, but because we don't have love of Godhead, we can hardly expect that Krishna will offer himself to us as he's doing here on account of our prema. But Tulsi does have love of Godhead. And if you offer Tulsi to Krishna, Krishna becomes so pleased with that offering that even then he's prepared to give himself to the devotee. Lifetime after lifetime. I offer myself to you, although I am unconquerable and indomitable. I am won over by you. I am now your property. So anyway, then it describes further, that the Lord reciprocates with his devotees' love. I wish we had time. I could read more, but I'm not going to read much more here. I'll just explain it to you to make it shorter. That Krishna, when the devotee is lamenting and lamenting on account of his realization of his inability to properly express himself in his attempt to glorify Krishna, he swoons and becomes enwrapped in meditation. And at that time, Krishna manifests Brajadam, and then he manifests the cowherd boys and the gopis. And in this way, the devotee has a divine revelation of Krishna's yogapit, and he becomes overwhelmed with the ecstasy of actually experiencing the Anduranga Brajadam, or the Aprakata Brajadam. And at that time, Krishna, he withdraws the vision. So Krishna's doing this again and again. The point that I'm really trying to bring out is that Krishna, again and again, he places himself before the devotees in a myriad of ways. And then again, he takes himself away and again shows himself, takes himself away, shows himself, takes himself away. Even from the stage of Shraddha, we see sometimes devotees, they ask the question that when I first came to Krishna consciousness, isn't it? When I first came to Krishna consciousness, I experienced some, happiness and amazing transformations, even it appears that it is corresponding to the descriptions of Asta Sattvic Vikara. I experienced my heart being filled with Ananda. But where are those days now? How is it that no longer I have such, experiences of Krishna's special mercy upon me? So it is like that again and again and again. It's like Krishna's, you see in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's Leelas, how it is that Mahaprabhu at Jagannath Puri, when he was wandering, he saw Krishna playing flute behind the tree. And then as he's running to catch Krishna, Krishna disappears again. And then, Tweedledee from behind another tree. So it is like that. Mahaprabhu is again and again. Sometimes we hear the beauty of Krishna's flute, even in the matter of our hearing Srila Prabhupada's chanting of the Maha Mantra as Krishna's flute is manifesting, or we get a glimpse of the beauty of Krishna's leelas by reading the pages of Srimad Bhagavatam. And in some respects, it might be said that Krishna, even in these cases, covers our vision. Sometimes he lifts the veil of Yogamaya, and sometimes he lets the veil again cover. Sometimes we get a glimpse into what we perceive to be truth, and then sometimes we again become covered by Krishna's Maya, Mahamaya even. So, Prabhupada said Maya means mercy. So we should always think that Krishna, in every respect, at the very onset of the jivas coming to this material world, Krishna always has our well-being in mind. He always wants us to come to the point of absolute perfection. He's always doing everything. This whole material cosmic creation is manifest just for the purpose of increasing our love for Him. There's no other purpose than increasing our love for Krishna. After all, it can be said that we took Krishna cheaply once, so He's playing this hard-to-get game, you know, so that we don't take Him cheaply again, because something which is achieved after a long struggle is all the more relishable. Victory is all the more sweeter after a good battle. So Krishna understands this principle. He wants to increase our anxiety for Him. He wants to make us work hard. It's just like if someone works very hard for his money, then he becomes more attached to his money. And as is mentioned here in our present day sloka, that if one loses that money, then he cannot but think of that money, that wealth, lost wealth, 24 hours a day. So in this way, Krishna is making it possible for a devotee to gradually increase his anxieties and appreciation for Krishna's, let's say, little drops of nectar, little drops of mercy all along the way. It is not that we have to, you know, be on the topmost platform of Mahabhav before we can begin to appreciate this principle. However, we should understand that just as Krishna plays hard to get, now this is the punchline, if you don't mind. Just as Krishna plays hard to get, because He doesn't want to be taken cheaply, don't mind, but we'll also get the chance to get back at Him. We'll get the chance to get back at Him. In other words, He has put us into so much anxiety, so much trouble, so much, let's say, suffering conditions of life, and all along the way, increasing our anxiety from, let's say, the most degraded condition all the way up to the topmost position of Mahabhav. When we come, if by Krishna's grace we come to that position, if by our Guru's grace we come to that position, when we come to that position, and even before we come to that position, in certain respects, we can at least anticipate and appreciate the bhav, that why it is that Radharani manifests her man, why it is that she manifests jealous anger, why it is stated that mahatmanastumam partham daivim prakriti ashrita. Why is it? Radharani, she plays hard to get for Krishna. It's not just that Krishna plays hard to get for everybody, and he gets some kind of, sense gratification out of the affair. But Radharani also plays hard to get to Krishna. She plays hard to get. Why? So that she's not taken cheaply. Because she doesn't want to be taken cheaply, so she plays hard to get for Krishna. And mahatmanastamam partham daivim prakriti ashrita, taking shelter of Krishna's daivim prakriti means to take shelter of Radharani. Prabhupada has again and again made this point. Of course, it may refer to other manifestations of Krishna's antaranga shakti or sarup shakti, but primarily for us Gaudiya Vaishnavas, taking shelter of Krishna's daivim prakriti means to take shelter of Srimati Radharani. Radharani is Vama in her mood to Krishna. And those who are followers of Rupa and Raghunath in the matter of cultivating the Madhurya Ras, at least they should understand why it is that we're, let's say, we're enjoined to take shelter of Srimati Radharani and serve and facilitate that bhava, bhama mood, that bhama bhav of Srimati Radharani. Why it is that if we are, blessed by the unimaginable mercy of Srimati Radharani, why it is that we will find ourselves in the camp of Lalita Devi. Lalita Devi is Vama Prakara. Vama Prakara. Radharani is Vama Madhya. And Lalita Devi is Vama Prakara. Prakara means very harsh. Because she's also a manifestation of Daivam Prakriti. So this manifestation of Daivam Prakriti in the form of Radha, in the form of Lalita Devi, they will help us. How will they help us? Because we need help. Why do we need help? Because we are Bibhanangsa. We are very, 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 very tiny. It's very easy for us to be swept under the rug. It's very easy for us to be taken cheaply. It's very easy for us to be, it's very easy for Krishna to, disregard us in certain respects. Because we're insignificant. What do we have to offer to Krishna? Yet Krishna delights when the jiva becomes so qualified, that jiva also becomes fit to play hard to get. But the jiva cannot play hard to get because without taking shelter of those who are competent to play the game. The jiva cannot play hard to get because Krishna's beauty and his sweetness, as we were just reading, how overwhelming his beauty and sweetness is, that who could resist? But yet we have to resist because we have to somehow or other increase our value. We have to increase our value in the eyes of Krishna. So it is essential. It's an essential aspect of the culture of the Madhurya Ras that we understand, especially the Madhurya Ras, that we understand that sooner or later we're going to come to the position where we also get to play hard to get. Krishna's, he's playing his flute and calling us, and we're going, "Oh, Krishna," and running off to Krishna, and then Krishna disappears behind a bush, and then again he appears in another place, plays his flute a little further down the road, and then gradually we come to the position where Krishna plays his flute and we say, "Excuse me, Buster, we're not dancing tonight." You know, "Huh? You mean I've gone through so much trouble, Krishna's gone through so much trouble to bring us to him, and then here we are telling him no when he's tugging on our saris?" You know, just like it's described that sometimes Rupa Manjari, sometimes Krishna, he will do prankish things like tearing at her cloth, tearing at her blouse, etc. Mani Manjari similarly, she will refuse to have anything to do with that devotee, Krishna. And Rupa Manjari, but we should not think that they never have anything to do with them. Rather, they have everything to do with them, because their beauty far surpasses even the beauty of Radharani Sakhis. So that beauty doesn't go unnoticed. Krishna derives the greatest pleasure, the highest pleasure, in the association of Radharani's maidservants. That is the greatest contribution of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in the matter of the realization of the topmost limit of Krishna's golden compassionate nature upon the fallen conditioned souls. The Manjaris always play hard to get. And by playing hard to get, Hare Krishna, by playing hard to get, they increase their value and they show the way for the jivas who are, let's say, elevated to that platform. These jivas, these devotees who are, praying like this in the pages of the Bhagavatam, please remember that in previous lives, they were sages of Dandakaranya. Many of them were sages of Dandakaranya. They were coming from the status of ordinary human beings. We are also ordinary human beings. So if ordinary human beings like the sages of Dandakaranya, you know, were able to come to the position of the topmost bliss of experiencing Krishna's Maharas, as we will be reading about shortly in the Bhagavatam class, we should know that this is an invitation to every one of us. The purpose of the Krishna Consciousness Movement is to give everyone a chance to become Gopijanas. And it is by the chanting of the holy name that one comes to that position. By the chanting of the holy name of Krishna, one, discovers the nature of his natural inherent capacity for loving Krishna in one of the five primary rasas. In the matter of realization of our sambandha, or our eternal relationship with Krishna, it is at Vansibhat, when Krishna calls all the gopis for Maharas. The gopis, they come to the position of the sadhan siddha gopis. They come to the position of being able to enter into Krishna's relationship the first time. Their introduction to Krishna will be at Vansibhat. That is the doorway into the eternal loving reciprocation between Krishna and his gopis. So that will be the first experience that the jiva gets of Krishna's transcendental love dalliance, will be Maharas. So they get the opportunity for that. We get the opportunity. We will get the opportunity for that, you know. If we will give up all pretentiousness, all deceitfulness, and sincerely chant the holy name, preferably in the performance of Sankirtan Jagya, which is the most powerful inoculation against the influence of Maya, like that. So anyway, we've belabored the issue sufficiently, I think. Not sufficiently, but long enough for now. Are there any questions or comments? It's getting late, but there may be, you know, a couple questions. Huh? Any other ideas? Was there anything which was not understood about my verbose dissertation? Yes, Mataji? Is there no mic?
You mentioned that we should desire to enter into the eternal love state. And you were mentioning that we should not, if I heard it correctly, that it's not through preaching we will be entering into the love state.
I said that? I never said that.
We should desire to enter into the eternal love state. So what was the best
part? No.
The preaching part.
Now the point is that we should not be proud of ourselves as preachers. That was the point, that we should not be proud of ourselves as preachers until we've gone there. Why don't you go there and find out? It was the point. Why don't you go there and find out what is the experience? Get the experience of the Ki-jai. The experience from darkness to light that the emancipated jiva has by Krishna's grace, it makes the devotee the most fit in the matter of preaching Krishna consciousness. So our real business is to make ourselves fit. Higher than saving others is to save oneself. There will be an eternity because the material world is vyakta and avyakta for eternity. There will always be unlimited conditioned souls to come back to deliver. It is not that we have to, let's say, of course, we don't want to deprecate the principle of practicing our exhibition of compassionate nature. Therefore, I say Harinam Sankirtan. Because Harinam Sankirtan means Harinam Prachar. Kirtan is, bhajan is for one's own personal benefit. But kirtan, when there's loud chanting, it is for the benefit of others. So, because we are part and parcel of the compassionate nature of Krishna, it's necessary for us to somehow or other augment our compassionate nature. So that we can see our own compassionate nature, which is the very, foundation of the bliss that we experience against the black background of our most selfish condition of life in material existence. So, that broadcasting of the holy name of Krishna, you know, is the best means by which one can both experience Krishna's compassion and experience the awakening of one's own compassionate or premic nature.
So my question is, that you don't have to separately desire to be enlightened as Father or Krishna? Do you have to?
Yes, why not? Separately, why do you have to say separately? It's not an automatic process. That's a very good question. It's not an automatic process. The process is that the chanting must be done with conception. A conception is there when we will hear from authorities. Shrotriyam Brahmanishtam. Shrotriyam means to hear from authorities. So to come to the spiritual platform, we have to hear from the authorities. Hearing from the authorities means there's like practically unlimited subject matter for hearing, because the Absolute is unlimited. So we can go on hearing ad infinitum about the pastimes of Krishna. But as Prabhupada is told, by desire we come to this material world, and by desire we get out of this material world. As I pointed out in previous classes, that it's very necessary to understand what should be the direction of our desire if we want to refine the quality of our chanting. Someone may be chanting, but instead of thinking of, having the aspiration to enter into the Brajalilas, he may be chanting in a generic sense. Or maybe he's thinking Hare Rama means Ramchandra, etc. Even if you're thinking Hare Rama means Balaram, if you're attached to the the feet of Balaram, then you will not achieve the Madhurya Ras. It is unlikely. Although Nityananda Ram is, an empowered feature of Balaram, to also give the Madhurya Ras. But Baladev, he introduces you to his Madhurya Sarup, Anang Manjari, who then introduces you to the service of Radha and Krishna. Heno Nitai Bine Bhai Radha Krishna Phaite Nai. Nitai is Anang Manjari in Tattva, inclusive of that Tattva. And as such, she is Adi Guru in the Madhurya Ras, who acts as the liaison between the jivas and Radha and Krishna's sevas. So there must be some desire. We cannot be free from desire. No one is desireless. It's a question of changing the account of the desires or changing the quality of the desires. So that is a conscientious effort. That conscientious effort is required. When there's lobha, then only the chanting, when the chanting will be, let's say, on the basis of a greed to attain the realm of Braja in the service of Radha and Krishna, then that chanting, whether it's japa, whether it is Sankirtan Jagya, or whether it's any other form of kirtan, which is meant for glorifying Krishna for the benefit of others, including deity worship, cleansing the temple, book distribution, making life members, any form of kirtan that there may be, this kirtan only becomes rag bhakti when there is lobha for attaining the ultimate goal, the desired objective of Radha and Krishna prema or braja prema. If that lobha is not there, so then we have to look in our heart and by our introspection we should see where we stand. If we don't have the lobha, if we don't have sufficient accumulation of ragmai bhaktyon mukhe sukriti, which creates lobhumoya shraddha, if we don't have steadiness in our determination to pursue the path of braja bhakti, then it is incumbent upon us to resort to the principles of vaidhi bhakti. We have no other recourse, and we must do with diligence. But it is to be understood that by associating with Rasik Vaishnavas, such as Srila Prabhupada, and I'm sure that by now there must be at least one or two, a few, a handful, you know, of Rasik Vaishnavas in Srila Prabhupada's society who can help us to get that lobhamoya shraddha by their association. By pointing out to us the conclusions of the Shastras. That which we are following, you should also follow. And by associating with them, by hearing from them, and by, let's say, doing some whatever little services we may be able to do in their company, then it may be possible for us to increase our bhaktyun mukhi sukriti to the extent where the shraddha becomes stronger. Our business is to strengthen our shraddha. But it's not just that if we want to go to Brajalila, then it is not just a matter of strengthening our shraddha for the shastric injunctions, but we have to strengthen our shraddha. Shraddha means regard. So we have to strengthen our regard for the realm of Braja, strengthen our regard for the pastimes of Krishna's Brajalilas, strengthen our regard for the principle of unalloyed Kevala Bhakti, which is only found in Braja. So, and we strengthen the regard by hearing about the things. And by hearing about, we get more appreciation. And as our appreciation increases, our regard increases. And our aspiration becomes fixed up and determined. So we have to be, intent on actually achieving something. Otherwise, it may become a haphazard affair. And then we don't know what is the outcome. We may be relegated to, an inferior realm on account of our inferior quality of bhakti or quality of bhajan. Or, as we were previously pointing out, Krishna may keep us within this material world lifetime after lifetime until we come around to the position that he desires to see of us. You know, so that may happen to any one of us. It is not that just because we joined this International Society for Krishna Consciousness that we have it made in the shade. We have to make progress and we have to make a concerted effort, you know, get the direction, necessary direction in our bhajan. Even if we have lobhamoya shraddha, on the basis of that shraddha, we have to research the shastras in order to get the necessary direction in the cultivation of the braja bhavas. Because there's no indication anywhere of any other source of that information which is required in the matter of cultivating the braja bhakti than the shastras. So we have to take advantage. Therefore we're distributing Srimad Bhagavatam, to give people a chance to have a change of heart, to change their desires, to become acquainted with something which is of the supreme beautiful nature, which will attract our hearts. And that is Mahaprabhu's mission. Mahaprabhu's mission, chanting Hare Krishna, distribution of Bhagavat Dharma, Bhagavat Katha, like that. Then there's chance for us to, let's say, become inspired to desire something of a higher order. Even Uddhava came to Vrindavan to see, Krishna sent him here, just to see a type of bhakti which was of a higher order than his own bhakti in Dwarka. And when he saw such, he was so impressed that he desired to become a blade of grass so that he could be trampled by the feet of the gopis and get the foot dust of the gopis, so that his life may be consecrated by that degree of intensity of devotion that he saw in them. So, I hope that's good enough for now. Hare Krishna. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Param Vijayate Sri Krishna Sankirtan ki jai, Gaur Bhakta Sangha ki jai. Hare Krishna.